Well, welcome everybody to another edition of The Last Christian. My name is J.D. Williams here in East Texas, and joining me there from New York City is my co-host and my brother in Christ. That's Mr. David Paxton. David, how's things going today up there?
It's pretty good. It's a nice day, a little brisk. I'll get the blood moving out here. No chaos from anywhere, so that's good. Just a typical New York City stuff. Yeah.
I can't believe there's not any chaos in New York City. There's plenty of it in the world, and that's something we're going to talk about today. Did you know that we have, and we're going to get into this. You guys know I don't like to get political, but unfortunately, every now and then, politics, Bible prophecy come together, and when that happens, we have to discuss it. And so we're going to be talking about three university professors that they want to know in what context it's okay to say this kill the Jews. Now, we're going to go into that deep because these people are supposed to be intelligent, and they have absolutely no intelligence, either that or they're so far gone that they can't even receive professional help to fix the way that they think. Now, all three are under major fire right now. This isn't really political, by the way, because both Democrats and Republicans, both sides, are condemning them and calling for their resignation. And we're going to get into that a little bit. But what I want people to understand is that these people are indoctrinating your children, our children, to hate the United States, to hate Israel, to promote fascism, to promote Nazism, if I may go that far, and I believe for the first time since World War II, it actually applies. People have tried to put Nazism into everything that I can think of in the past, but this is the first time that it's actually being used in the correct context because the Nazis wanted to eliminate the Jews. It was their goal to kill every Jew in the world and to forget Israel. And that's exactly what these university professors are trying to protect in their universities by allowing their students to promote the exact same thing, the destruction of the Jews. David, do you have any comment on that? Because I think that this is a factual discussion, and I'll support it as a member of the U.S. Press Association. I don't think we should hide from it. I think we should address it. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, it all goes, you know me, I'm going to bring it back to the Bible, and it's all Bible prophecy. He said in the end times, he'll give them over to strong delusion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many times as Christians, people will say, okay, this is the strong delusion or that, but it encompasses everything.
Right.
And they'll just be completely deluded from the truth of the word. And then you got to be... the Bible tells us to stand, you know, put on the whole armor of God so we can stand against the wiles of the devil. And basically, the wiles means to lie in wait and trickery, you know. So he's sitting around waiting for this and that, and then he's got all these different schemes and plans. And this is just another plan.
No.
You know, he's got to get the world against Israel because we're here at the end of the age. He's got to... Somehow in his mind, he thinks that he has to thwart God's plan because Israel will be restored and they will receive their Messiah as a nation, ultimately. And that's coming up at the end of Revelation and the 7-year tribulation. That's specifically to push them towards the Messiah so they do repent. So anyone that can come along and say, oh, we got to kill them all, and that's what they've been trying to do since Haman, right? Way back in the book of Ruth,
right?
Because he's trying to thwart God's plan, and these are the wiles that he's doing. So this is just another way, you know, and it's this drop and this drop and this drop until he wears you out. Say the lie, you know, loud enough and long enough, and then people will believe it.
Right.
And it's to desensitize. So here they are, they're in the colleges, and they were placed there on purpose to desensitize the younglings coming up to you know, a people group, basically, and God's chosen one.
Right. Well, as I said, we're going to talk about it even more. And you know, these aren't little small colleges. This is Ivy League. You know, these are supposed to be the smart people I mean, you know, I'm talking book smart, not street smart, and there's a difference. Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools.
Yeah. Yeah. We're also going to talk a little bit today about what's going on in Russia in regard to NATO. Okay. There's some new stuff going on there that's a little bit frightening. Also, China and Taiwan. And then, of course, we're going to get into a lot about Israel as well. You know, that's the apple of God's eye. That's where the world is focused. That little strip of land, the size of New Jersey, dominates the entire world. I wonder why. You know, I wonder why.
I wonder why.
Okay.
Yep.
Let's begin. We do this every week, the Week in Review. And so let's just go over it a little bit. It kind of takes us where we need to go. And we will start with the United Nations Security Council in a little bit more.
The United Nations Security Council has voted on a resolution for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. There were 13 votes in favor, one against from the United States and one abstention from the United Kingdom. The United States is again not supporting a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Deputy U.S. Ambassador to the UN Robert Wood has reiterated his country's stance that it will remain focused on diplomacy geared at getting more hostages released and more aid flowing into Gaza.
While the United States strongly supports a durable peace in which both Israelis and Palestinians can live in peace and security, we do not support calls for an immediate ceasefire. This would only plant the seeds for the next war, because Hamas has no desire to see a durable peace, to see a two-state solution.
The European Union has announced that it will increase humanitarian aid to Palestinians in 2024. The EU's executive said the funding will provide support both in Gaza and in the West Bank. Alex Cadier reports from Brussels.
The European Union will provide 125 million euros in humanitarian aid to Palestine next year. That's a more than 20% increase on the 103 million it provided in 2023. The bloc, which is the largest contributor of aid to Palestine, has described this as an initial pledge, meaning that more funding may still be made available later in the year. Shortly after Hamas's October 7th attack in Israel, the EU drew criticism when one of its commissioners said he would suspend all development funding to Palestine, a move later overturned by Commission President von der Leyen. The message for now is that the EU will continue to provide aid for the long run. Alex Cadier, Brussels.
So what kind of aid's going to Israel? They're the ones that got attacked. So what's the funding that the United Nations is sending to them? What's the value?
I think that's zip.
Yeah, zero. Absolutely nothing. So it's okay to kill Jews. It's okay. It's okay to do mass, just shoot a
in
rocket.
In their opinion.
Yeah, shoot a rocket. We don't care where it lands. If it happens to land in the middle of school and it kills 2,000 Israeli children, we are very, very sorry. It was a miscalculation. It shouldn't have happened. We will do everything we can to maybe we might be able to stop it from happening again. Then the world turns around and says, you know, you really shouldn't do that. But, you know, it's okay. We understand mistakes happen. Now then, Israel goes in, they do pinpoint strikes on places where they have warned people for weeks, we're going to hit there, we're going to hit there, get out of the way, get out of the way. And so then they shoot a rocket, it destroys exactly what they said it was going to destroy. And there's four people that were civilians that were killed, and the world goes into an outrage and they need a diaper change. It is unbelievable. It is totally unbelievable.
They were told to leave.
Yeah, unbelievable. But that's really where we're at. Now, Israel has increased, this report coming out of Reuters, that Israel has increased the Gaza strikes and that the UN is decrying humanitarian nightmare, is what they're calling it. This is the fact that Israel did sharply increase its strikes on the Gaza Strip, pounding the length of the Palestinian enclave. And here's where the report starts to make a left turn here. Killing hundreds in a new expanded phase of the war, Washington again signaled that Israel could do more to protect civilians in the enclave. Like what? What can they do more? They warn them. They hit exactly what they say they're going to hit. What else and, do and they need? Do they need somebody to go in and take them by the hand and walk them out, and they're only going to run right back in again? I mean, what do they do? What is it that they can do, David? Tell me.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's this is just nonsense. But I noticed in the thing they're talking about, oh, peace and safety. Mm-hmm. This is precisely what the Bible talks about.
Exactly.
Up to the end time, there'll be
exact
the nation.
Quote.
Yeah. The nations and rages, and then, you know, he says, why are the nations rage? And every one of the nations comes against it. Let me see. Okay, so it talks about even be prepared. It talks about why do the heathen rage is another one in Psalm 46. And we always look at Psalm 38. The heathen raged, 46:6 says, and the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice and the earth melted. So we're going to see all these things. But if we're going to see the Lord have dominion, we need to expect that the entire world's going to come against them, and without reason. It's like it's just this evil spirit that takes them over. But in 1 Thessalonians 5:3, it says, you know, when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction will come upon them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing that now. The nations are raging,
right?
And they're crying out for somebody to come in and bring peace,
yeah,
and safety. Mm-hmm. And those words are real simple. Actually, the peace means implication of rest and prosperity as well. It's irene in the Greek. Peace. So they're bringing in peace and prosperity, and then safety is, you know, security. So these are the things that they're looking for. So if you see any of those things, that someone's got to come in and do it, that's going to be analogous to the Antichrist, if not the Antichrist himself.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, when they're talking about peace and safety, in my opinion, they're talking about either that the peace and safety is a result of something that they're doing. That could be one possibility. The other possibility is that this comes after the rapture, during the tribulation period, where the Antichrist says, okay, now I'm going to bring you peace and safety. We work out this deal. Which one of those?
Can I touch on that for another minute?
Yeah, go right ahead. Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to clarify it in my own mind. So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, here's kind of a bigger scenario. And, you know, if you got questions, let's just dig into that.
Okay.
But here comes the end times. The devil knows that the rapture is coming. He just knows, you know, and he's got the tares in the church to say, oh, no, there's no rapture. And then there's some that say this and that. Remember, the road is very narrow that's going to heaven. There's so many people that claim to be Christians, and I would admonish you, if you're out there and listening to this, you better check to see if you really are following Christ.
Amen.
But,
yes,
you know, if you're like a rapture denier, like out of boom, then you really need to check your doctrine. If you say it's post, I'm okay with you. You got your timing wrong. It's very, very clear all over the place, and we can get into that in another show. But the devil knows this. He knows the rapture is coming. So if you follow the scenario that's laid out, it's actually pretty easy. He's laying out that there has to be some kind of aliens that came to take them. I mean, that's all you hear about in the news now. Oh, we discovered aliens.
Yeah.
People been busting their chops for decades, you know, almost a couple centuries even. But that's why he had to start the evolution narrative back in the 1850s, okay? Because you have to get a series of a generation of people that think we just evolved out of some primordial goo,
right?
And then from monkeys, because then you can say, because what happens is now they realize that, you know, DNA, it means it's impossible to just spontaneously erupt into life. They understand that it's impossible that even a protein could form that would make a cell. So they understand it's impossible. So now all those people have a narrative that evolution is debunked, even amongst themselves, yet they are still atheists. So what's their next go-to? Someone else smarter than us came and planted all of this primordial goo so we can grow into humans. So he had to plant that narrative way back to head the generations, because he knew the rapture was coming. And when we are taken out, they're going to have all this new age stuff, which started, remember, the 80s, about how, oh, you people aren't enlightened. You just don't understand.
Right.
And the aliens are going to come down, and everyone's going to fall for the great delusion. And they're going to say, though, it was good. It was good because they were taken away to be re-educated. But don't worry, I'll bring them back. Mm-hmm. This is the narrative that he's trying to push, trying to get rid of Israel. He's got a plan for when the rapture happens. So this is what we're starting to see. That narrative is being laid out all throughout the news. Peace and safety. We see that. We see this covenant. They're going to sign. All these agreements are coming up. Oh, maybe this, you know, Abrahamic Accord didn't work, but we can make another agreement. Even some people, which I kind of lean towards, are talking about he establishes a covenant. It doesn't say he writes a new one. He says he confirms a covenant. Mm-hmm. So he may even confirm the fact that Jews have a right to Jerusalem and they can build their temple, because that's what the Messiah would do.
Well, now I contend, David, on that point that, yes, he will say that Israel has a right to build the temple. My contention is that comes after the Gog and Magog War, in which basically every Islamic army that's available is destroyed in the mountains, which destroys any kind of Islamic thought, basically. You know, they can honestly say, yes, Israel can have this now, but, you know, the Islamic people aren't here anymore, so I don't have to worry about that. All I've got to do is pacify the rest of the world. Now, that's my contention. Whether or not that is what actually happens, I don't know. Okay, only God knows the answer to that. But that's just my personal contention. Do you have an argument for or against that?
No, all those things, it can be argued one way or another, but all I do know, it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
Because it's crystal clear, every single time prophecy happens, it's immediately afterwards we go, oh, that's what he meant.
Yeah, yeah. That brings me back to that. You remember I told you in a previous show that there was a lady, you know, that was in a coma forever, and, you know, she finally, she opened, right at death, she opened her eyes and spoke for the first time in weeks, and all she said was, let me see if I can get the right words. Of course. You know, and I mean, that fits perfectly, doesn't it? I mean, that's just perfect.
Yeah. And, you know, Bible prophecy is that way. It's esoteric on purpose, because the devil's reading the Bible too. So he can't tell them the exact day is coming. He can't tell them all the plans. If the devil knew exactly what Jesus meant when he wrote all those prophecies about his first coming, he never would have crucified him, and the plan never would have been fulfilled. Mm-hmm. It's the same now. We have all these prophecies that were written thousands of years ago, millennia ago, and they're all starting to come to pass,
right?
But they're esoteric, where you cannot pinpoint exactly what's happened until the moment after it happens,
right?
And then it's undeniable. Just like, you know, all of a sudden we realize, well, May 14th, 1948, that was precisely the exact amount of days of judgment that Israel had as a nation, and he said they would come back. It was exact to the day, the day of the judgment of Israel.
Yeah, and but still people deny. Still people deny the Bible, you know,
because they. I've given up on them.
All they do is they want to tell you, oh no, you're wrong. Why?
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, I don't have a reason, but you're wrong. Okay. Well, no, I'm right. You know, you want to read the Bible? No, I don't want to read the Bible because it's got rules in it.
No, I don't want truth. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Prove it to me. Scary. It did. Here's the Bible.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Now, again, as I said, Israel has increased their strikes in Gaza. They're tightening the noose there, and it's driving the UN nuts. Okay, but anyway, let's listen to this one real quick, give you an idea of what I'm talking about.
Israeli military forces have encircled Gaza's largest refugee camp after a raid on a Hamas command post in the settlement, where they uncovered surveillance equipment, weapons, and maps.
The Israeli Defense Forces are actively operating around the Jabalia camp, north of Gaza City, following their earlier actions against other Hamas bases, where they demolished military infrastructure and seized critical military positions used for attacks on Israeli troops, as per an IDF news release, Benjamin Wright reporting.
All right, I wanted to put that picture up there to give people an idea of just what it must be like to be in that area right now. I would hate to wake up every day and that's my city, you know?
Did you see the meme with the Lego set? And the Lego set is of Gaza, and all it is just a big pile of gray bricks.
Yeah, that's, you know, and again, now, you know, for you folks that don't get this in visual form and want to see some of these pictures, then please do go to www.lastchristian.net. That's www.lastchristian.net, and you can find shows there. If you're listening to us on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button as well as the little bell to remind you of when we post new videos. It's our smallest outlet. There's some funny business going on with YouTube, but I'm not going to go into that because YouTube would take offense at that, I'm sure. But I've even showed it to David. I've showed it to a few people, and it's kind of amazing, really. I mean, we got a pretty good idea what we actually do. But you know, as I said, there's some funny business going on there. But we'd really love to build the channel and make it, you know, kind of join up with what we've already got. I do want to get into a couple of other news items real quick. We'll get them, hopefully get most of them out of the way before we get into the second half of the show. But the former Russian president, he's now the deputy chairman of the Russian Security Council. I'm talking about Dmitry Medvedev. Okay. So he's like second in command right now in the Russian Federation. He was the president of Russia right before Putin took over. It was Putin and then Medvedev and now Putin again, and Medvedev is still there. Now, he has an exact, and this is an exact quote, listen to this very, very carefully. "Never since the Cuban Missile Crisis has the threat of a direct clash between Russia and NATO with a transition to World War III been so real." Now, he has threatened nuclear weapons before. I'm talking about tactical nuclear weapons, not the kind that, you know, where we get into World War III right off. Even though I will say this, somebody fires a nuclear weapon, we're in World War III right off. I mean, mm-hmm. It's pretty simple. But he's now making it pretty clear that Russia's ready. You know, I mean, he's made it very clear. Following the outbreak of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Medvedev repeatedly threatened to use nuclear weapons and the outbreak of World War III, and as recently as late November, Sergei Rakhabov, it's Russia's deputy minister for foreign affairs, claimed that Russia was ready for war with NATO. Kind of a scary thing there, David. What do you think?
And I don't know if you're aware of this, but Russians are the descendants of the Scythians.
Who did you say they
the
were?
The Scythians. Yeah, okay. And they were renowned, the fiercest warriors. I mean, they would they'd be able to ride their horse and then fire backwards with 100% accuracy and hit whoever was chasing them. So you couldn't even chase them away.
Wow.
And then they would eat their food out of the skulls of their enemies. This is what these people were like. And the Russians are actually the descendants of the Scythians, so probably not a good idea to mess with them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Germany found that out in World War II, you know, when they opened up the second front and thought they were just going to cruise right on through Russia, and that turned out to be their biggest mistake, I guess, opening up that front, because they had a peace deal with them. So, yeah, not not good. Also, one other item here. We got China. Now, this is Chinese fighter jets. Mm-hmm. Chinese fighter jets, as well as guess what it was? Just take a wild guess what else they flew over there besides a jet.
Alien.
A weather
spaceship.
Balloon.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. Okay. Taiwan said just Friday that 12 Chinese fighter jets and a suspected weather balloon had crossed the Taiwan Straits. Say that one quick. sensitive
in
median
Chinese.
Line in ratcheting up tensions about a month before the island's presidential election. Now, this is significant mm-hmm. because basically what they're saying is that China is telling the Taiwan people, be careful who you vote for. Because, you know, we're mm-hmm. ready. Here, we're, you know, you've seen us use these tests over and over and over again. We're ready.
Yep, we're watching you, and we could drop bombs when you're not looking. Yeah. All sorts of threats.
It says Chinese Taiwan... You know Affairs Office did not respond to a request for comment about Taiwan's interference accusations. Previously, as I said, only it respects Taiwan's social systems, not, you know, not anything else. They just respect their social systems. It has, however, framed the election as a vote between war and peace and urged Taiwan's people to carefully consider their choices. In other words, you better vote for who we want you to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though we respect your social stuff, doesn't mean anything
at all.
As long
as you do what we say.
Yeah.
We respect your freedom as long as you do what we tell you.
Right. Okay. So we've reached the end of the first half of the show, and we still got a lot to go. Remember, we're going to be talking about those university professors. I'm going to spend a quite bit of time on that. I think it's important. And also, of course, a little bit more about what's going on in Israel. Israel is key to everything, and that's what people need to understand. Mm-hmm. God is not basing his decisions as far as the rapture goes, the end of the world, any of that stuff, on what happens here in the United States of America. It's all based on Israel. You better keep your eyes on Israel, because that's the key. Let me say it again. That's the key. Israel is the key. Always has been and will be. So just keep that
Amen.
In mind. We're also looking for that last Christian, the last individual to accept Jesus Christ.
Yeah, hurry up already.
For the rapture. Yeah, we are more than ready. So regardless of the station that you may be listening to us on, we'll be back right after the break with the second half of The Last Christian. Hang in there. We'll be right back.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Caroline Malone with The Week in Review. Hostilities are making humanitarian efforts nearly impossible in Gaza, according to the United Nations. Their agencies are warning there needs to be a ceasefire or thousands more people will die. The United States isn't supporting a ceasefire, but it has issued some of its strongest criticism of Israel's conduct in the war in Gaza since fighting began. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said there was a gap between the Israeli government's intent to protect civilians and the mounting casualties on the ground. Sally Patterson has more.
Speaking in Washington, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken urged Israel to protect Palestinian civilians. According to the Hamas-run health ministry, more than 17,000 people have been killed since fighting began, following a surprise attack on Israel on October 7th. The White House says in a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, U.S. President Joe Biden emphasized the critical need to protect civilians and to separate the civilian population from Hamas. An Israeli government spokesperson told reporters that Israel had put in place measures unprecedented in the history of warfare to keep civilians safe.
An Indian politician and opposition leader, also known to be a fierce critic of Prime Minister Narendra Modi and his party, was expelled from India's lower house of the parliament on Friday. The action comes after she was embroiled in a controversy over a bribery charge from October. Shiroshi Mukherjee reports from New Delhi.
Mohua Moitra, member of the opposition party Trinamool Congress, was accused of asking questions in the parliament in exchange for money. She appeared before an ethics committee that started hearing this case from late October. The committee in its report declared that it found her actions to be highly objectionable, unethical, heinous and criminal. According to Indian law, a member of parliament can be expelled if the House votes in favour of the committee's report. Ms. Moitra's party strongly argued to allow her to defend herself, but the resolution was put to vote without allowing her to speak. She was expelled by a voice vote in the lower house of the Indian parliament, and many members of opposition parties walked out as the vote was being conducted in protest. Sriyoshi Mukherjee, New Delhi.
UK's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is trying to convince Conservative MPs to back new legislation on the government's Rwanda migration plan. The new bill is meant to resurrect the government's flagship policy of sending asylum seekers to Rwanda. The Financial Times political editor George Parker says it's a major challenge for Sunak.
The problem for Rishi Sunak is that I think he's sort of fated to try to get this policy through because it's become such a totemic issue for the Conservatives. So he is going to persevere. There'll be the vote next week in the House of Commons on this new legislation. The problem is it's a massive advertisement for the fact that the government hasn't got a grip on illegal migration. And the longer this saga drags on, the more I suspect the public will just roll their eyes and basically say, we'll believe it when we see it.
And welcome back to the second half of The Last Christian. Again, my name is J.D. Williams here in East Texas. And joining me from New York City is my co-host, Mr. David Paxton. David, I want to go a little bit deeper into what's going on in Israel right now.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen where Israel is has encircled Gaza and certain areas there, and they're kind of squeezing it together. And so, you know, the world's getting scared that Israel's mm-hmm. actually going to take out Hamas. And it's embarrassing to see what the United States is doing. I got a report. I told you about this before the show started. I cannot independently verify this report yet, but it is actually coming from Fox News. And it states that Biden is giving Israel until the end of the year to end this war. And my question is, let's say they don't. What does he intend to do if Israel hasn't ended the war by the end of 2023?
You just got to laugh. It's like, okay, who are you? Why do I care? Get out. Yeah. You know? Biden has clearly known to be the toothless lion. He makes all these roars and threats and everything and does absolutely nothing. He's like his father, Obama. He does the same thing. Oh, don't cross this line. Don't cross this line now. Yeah. Hey, I told you not to cross that line. Now here's another line. Don't cross that.
Yeah. It's all bark and no bite. You know, all bark and no bite. And the world figured this out a long time ago. And that's the reason that we keep getting hit. Now, just this week, there was a drone attack on an embassy, on our embassy in Iraq. Now, this is a drone attack on our embassy in Iraq. Now, I grew up, correct me if I'm wrong here, okay? But I grew up under the impression that when you go onto the embassy grounds of another country, that you are in that country. And
correct.
If you do anything on their ground, you shoot one of their people or hurt one of their people in some way, that you have just committed an act of war against that country. Is that correct or not?
Yeah, that's 100% correct. It's akin to them coming here and shooting someone on our land.
Right.
It's exactly the same thing.
So why haven't we responded to an act of war against our embassy there? I mean, I'm not saying that we should go in with boots on the ground and do all this, you know, and just go to war against them. But I do think that we ought to shoot them a few missiles and wake them up to the reality that the United States of America is fully capable of knowing where you are, when you're there, and how to kill you. I think that should be something that they should fear on a second-by-second basis. My opinion. What do you think, David?
I think that the whole thing is orchestrated, number one, and that these guys are all just puppets. And number two, I think Iran and Iraq have them by the short hairs, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And what are they going to do about it? Mm-hmm. You know, okay, great. Now what, I'm gonna slap you. What are you going to do about it? Because they have them. They're like, okay, if you do anything, guess what I'm going to expose? What I'm going to do? Guess
the reporting that I'm getting is that the the weaponry that was used, these drones or whatever, are coming from Iran. Now, if I go back a few years, can't remember, maybe the 80s, maybe even into the 90s, I'm not sure, but Iran and Iraq were bitter enemies. They were in a war with each other, and now they're helping each other? Tell me that's not a shock to your system. I mean, we've been enemies with Russia for, you know, a couple of centuries, I guess. I can't see us working together to go against China or something. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know if you know where I'm going with that, but, you know, it just seems stupid.
You got to understand it. Yeah, Islam is, their whole gig is we're going to fight, because that is how they earn a place into their paradise.
Right.
Which there is no such thing as what they consider paradise. It's not heaven, and it's not the new heaven and the new earth. It's just this make-believe land that they made up. And unfortunately, Christians have gotten the idea of what heaven is by the fake picture of paradise. He's literally going to make a new earth for us.
Right.
So, you know, it's not this la-la land, but they can only earn it. And the reason for that is because on any given day, you could die, and then it depends how their false god Allah feels that day, whether he lets you into the paradise or not. However, there's one caveat. You can earn your way in, and you can earn your mother's way in if you kill yourself in some kind of a battle. So the whole Islamic mindset is we have to fight someone, and if there's no one else to fight, we will fight amongst ourselves, because they believe that's going to earn them that spot in paradise. So if there was nobody else, what's the proper English? There was nobody else at the time. That's why they were fighting each other. But now that they got a common enemy, so they'll get together and fight that, because as long as they're fighting something. And that's just the devil at work again.
Well, I just know that the world, the way that they're distorting things right now, is it's so blatantly obvious that I can't understand why people can't see it.
Great delusion. You want to bring that up? Let's bring that up again.
Yeah.
All right. So
that's exactly what it is, too. It's delusional.
So here's it's really powerful. It says, for the mystery of iniquity does already work, and he who lets will let. That's what we're talking about, you know, right now. That's old King James, but basically it is someone holding the lid on the abyss right now.
Yeah.
But he'll gonna be taken out of the way.
Right.
So when the wicked are revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming, that's going to be a glorious day. Mm-hmm. That's what we need to look forward to.
Right.
Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. So look for that. Not everybody with a miracle is from God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's power and signs and lying wonders with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish. They are perishing. Because and this is the crux of it, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause, God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe the lie, and that may all be damned who believe not the truth, but have pleasure in unrighteousness. Mm-hmm. They did not receive the truth. They didn't want to. So God said, okay, you're going to actually believe all these delusions.
Yeah. God always gives people the opportunity to make their own choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then people want to blame God for the choice they made. Unbelievable. Okay,
that's the way it goes.
Just another piece of this going on over there right now. And this got a little bit of play, and honestly, it got less play than I expected would receive, but it got some, and I think that this is going to be just the first off. I'll make that really clear. I believe it will happen again, and I'm going to put this guy's picture up here real quick. Okay, an Israeli tank killed this Reuters journalist in Lebanon. Now, here is the report. I want you to listen to the wording very, very carefully here, because I'm quoting this directly. On a clear day in southern Lebanon on October the 13th, near the border with Israel, a group of journalists from Reuters, Agence France-Presse, that's AFP, and Al Jazeera, gathered at the top of an exposed hilltop. They went there to film, from a distance, cross-border shelling by the Israeli military. They wanted to be seen, unmistakably, as journalists. They wore well-marked press vests, heard drones buzz overhead, and saw an Israeli helicopter patrol high above them. And then an Israeli tank crew fired on them twice. The attack killed Reuters journalist Issam Abdallah, age 37, and wounded six other journalists, one of them severely, AFP's Christina Ossi. Reuters spoke to more than 30 government and security officials, military experts, forensic investigators, lawyers, medics, and witnesses to piece together a detailed account of the incident. It also engaged in the Organization for Applied Scientific Research, an independent Dutch institution, to forensically examine the material that Reuters gathered at the scene. So, like I said, this got a lot less press coverage than I thought it would, because here you have a news person who was killed by accident, and now they want to go into a whole lot of, you know, okay, well, Israel knew they were press. No, not necessarily. If you're way up in the air and you're observing something from a drone, for instance, you can't see the press insignia. It's impossible. If you're up way high and it's on your back, you can't see it. Even if it's on your front, you can't see it. Have you ever seen those images of people where, you know, where they've got a drone has a target area, and you see the people walking around on the ground? They look like little ants. Okay, well, press insignia doesn't stand out when you look like an ant. Correct or incorrect?
That's correct. They need to do something else. But you know, my first thought on this is, okay, what are they lying about here?
Yeah,
because that's what they do, and it could be a number of things. It may, very well may have been an accident. Okay, so we're not so, you know, dogmatic to say it wasn't. It very well may have been.
Right.
It very well may have been, you know, that an inexperienced tank, you know, fighter pilot shooter.
Right. Yeah. I lost my word there for a minute.
Yeah, so it may very well have been. If I were to guess, I would say that there was Hamas or some kind of fighter hiding amongst them on purpose.
Yeah, and that they may not have been doing the normal press thing. They may have been doing some actual surveillance.
He's, you know, it could have been spies. It could have been you know, maybe they kidnapped the guy and said, hey, we're going to hide with you, or we're going to kill your whole family. I mean, there's so many different things. Or he may actually say, hey, come and be with me, and then, and I will hide you. We don't know the mentality of this press
and,
guy.
You know,
here.
This may be the reason why it hasn't received the play that I thought it would, because maybe Israel has got some stuff that they're holding back, you know, that the other side knows about, where they can say, no, mm-hmm. no, the lie you just made up, here's the proof it didn't happen, you know, or something like that. Who knows? Okay.
Yep. Now I just know we're not getting the truth.
No, we're not. I do want to get in now to this ongoing thing with the college professors in the Ivy League.
Mm-hmm.
They were called before Congress. These are the presidents of Harvard, MIT, and Penn. And I'm going to put their gorgeous pictures up here where you can see them. And
well, that explains a lot.
Yeah. Now, this is according to the Israeli National News. This was a high-profile congressional hearing. The presidents of three of the nation's top universities, they acknowledged that Jewish and Israeli students have felt unsafe on their campus since October the 7th and said that their schools were taking action to fight anti-Semitism. That's a lie.
That's because it sounds good.
When New York Republican Representative Elise Stefanik asked them directly if calling for the genocide of Jews is against the university's respective codes of conduct, all three presidents said the answer was dependent on the context. Okay. Now, she asked the question if it was against the university's respective codes of conduct to call for the genocide of Jews. This is a yes or no question. And they said, depends on the context. I would have immediately asked, and I'm sorry this lady didn't, but I would have immediately asked, okay, in what context is it permissible?
Mm.
Because I don't think they could answer that question.
No, they can't, but they were alluding to it like, oh, if I find an excuse, then I'll do it.
I mean, it just makes no sense. It says, this is a Penn president, Liz McGill, about context. He said, it is a content-dependent decision. Calling for the genocide of Jews is dependent on the context, that it's not bullying or harassment. This is the easiest question to answer. I don't get it. What is she doing? Is she crazy? I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand what she's talking about.
You know how people are. If they're lying, they kind of dance around it, and they'll try and make it sound one way or the other. Eventually, the truth comes out. But it's all over the place. It just permeates everything, and what we term anti-Semites. But technically, that's anybody who's from Shem, but they're anti-Jew is really what it is.
Now that second one, I got to clarify something real quick. That second one that I was talking about, that was actually the answer that was provided by. The second question was to Penn President Liz McGill. And responding to the same question, Harvard's president Claudia Gay said that when speech crosses into conduct, we take action. So I guess if they kill somebody, then it's against their code of conduct. That's all I can get out of that.
Can you do something to prevent that?
And then MIT's president, Sally Kornbluth, said that such language would only be investigated as harassment if it was pervasive and severe. Okay. Well, they're carrying signs from the river to the sea. They're taking Hamas's side.
Pervasive and severe.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
look at what they've done. I'm not going to go over the axe again, but you don't think that's severe, you know, October 7th?
I mean, if somebody tells you that they're going to kill you, you might want to pay attention to them, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's a joke. Hey, I'm going to kill you today. I don't think it's a joke, do you?
Now, again, they've given over to the strong delusion. And for fear of people rising up against them, they kind of dance around the facts.
And then it said, you know, these schools have faced legal action and have lost out on donations from Jewish and pro-Israeli advocates for their response to anti-Israel activism on campus, leading some to suspend pro-Palestinian student groups. None of the three universities representative on the panel have suspended any of these groups. So, you know, they're talking like, you know, we want to protect our Jewish students and all that, but they let them continue to protest and, you know, hold up signs from the river to the sea and, you know, call for the death of Israel and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have heard, and this is being reported by numerous agencies, that there's some big donors. I'm talking big money donors, you know, that give like $100 million a year and stuff like
right.
that. And they've pulled their donations. They're not doing it anymore. And you've also got groups on both the conservative side and the liberal side. I'm sure AOC's not involved, none of the squad, but, you know, they're calling on them to resign. You know, and you know, I've got a better idea. Let's have the board of, you know, I don't know what they call them up there. Down here we call them the Board of Regents, but, okay. you know.
Board of Rejects.
Well, the Board of Regents oversees a university, what they can do, like how much money they can pay a coach or, you know, a professor or whatever. And down here, the Board of Regents would vote these people out to say, you're gone, you're fired, okay? So I don't know what their Board of Regents or whatever they call it. I don't know where they stand politically. I have heard one group, one university, and I wish I could remember, I should have pulled it. But there was one university that says, we're not going to call for your resignation, but you should think about whether or not this is a job that you can handle. So, you know, I think that's kind of a way of saying, you know, it'd be a good idea if you resign before they put enough pressure on us where we have to fire you. That's how I took that. You have any comment on this, David? It's kind of crazy, but, you know, these are big universities, big names.
Yeah, they were all started as Christian universities, but over the years, you know, Satan always wiggles in his witches and warlocks. And specifically for that reason. And they dress like Christians, they look like Christians, they talk like Christians. And then little by little, you know, like in Revelation, it says he had horns of a lamb, but he spoke like a dragon. Mm-hmm. This little by little will just permeate. And then they all think, oh, I mean, I can't tell you how many discussions I get in and people think, oh, well, I went to the Lutheran cemetery or the Baptist and then this and that and the other. It's like, yeah, well, they didn't teach you anything. You know, let's actually look at the Bible now. And it wiggles into all this. Well, these schools started as Christian schools and then wiggled in all this stuff over the years. So now they pushed out any kind of Christianity, which by its rights would defend Israel. So here we are.
Yeah.
And well, you know, even up in the north, I mean, New York is a spiritual stronghold, you know. And as is Washington, D.C., these are strongholds that are there. So anything that's within the area is going to have a major influence.
Well, let me ask you this about New York. I mean, I've got a pretty good, you know, being a Texan, I got a pretty good idea what Texans think about different issues and can pretty much put a percentage on it, really, in locations and everything else. How does New York view the Jewish community and the United States support or non-support of Israel? And you can go to different regions of the state. I'm sure it's different, little different, you know, north, south, east, west, whatever, you know, like it is here in Texas. Can you give us kind of an idea where New York, the state, and then the city stand on this stuff?
Yeah, generally the state is conservative. You go up. It's when you fan out from the city, you get all the liberal parts, because then, you know, they'll tend to want to make some money and they'll live outside the city, but close enough where they can get into it. But when you go upstate, it's a lot more conservative. And then, but in the city, you literally have everybody. There's every nation of the world is represented here, and every language is spoken.
It's the true melting pot that the United States used to be called back. Okay. Go ahead.
And there's so many different Jewish communities here. And they come from all over the place. There's Ukrainian, there's Hasidics, there's Ashkenazis, there's just what we call secular, where they're just more worldly, but it's still a Jewish community. And just so many different types, and even little communities like those that are around as well. So there is a lot of support for Israel here just because there's a lot of Israel here.
Right, right.
So you don't see that.
I don't know. I got the idea that New York was very, very supportive of the Jewish community because there is such, of anywhere in the United States, and correct me if I'm wrong because I'm not from New York, obviously, but it seems to me like that the Jewish population is strongest in New York than it is in any other major city in the United States. The impression that I get.
There's been a lot of Aliyah, which is Jews returning from around the world to Israel. But I know for a fact, at one point, there were more Jews in New York City than in Israel.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, and Israel, of course, again, is a very small country. What's the population of New York now, David? New York City and then New York itself.
Officially, because remember,
officially, not the
officially, I think it's a little over 8 million.
Okay,
but yeah, there's so many people that that's nice. The consensus, thanks.
Uh-huh. Well, the reason I ask is because here I think Dallas is maybe 1.5 to 2 million overall people, and Houston's a little bit bigger, probably 2 million to 2.5. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are the biggest two cities in Texas. And so, New York, I guess New York City is almost as big as Dallas and Houston.
Exactly. New York is huge. It can take me, if I go from one end to the other, it could take me 2 hours to drive it.
Yeah. And
partly because of traffic, partly because of the distance. Yeah. But I think at any given time, there's about 30 million people who are actually in the city.
Okay, 30 million. And that's daily?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Because, people come in to work. There's people that aren't registered. There's people visiting, a lot of tourists.
Right.
So, but residents is like, what they counted was 8 million, but that doesn't include all the illegal immigrants that are living in the apartment that they don't register. So.
Right, right, right. Okay. All right. Well, we have come to the end of this week's show, The Week in Review. And again, this is where we put what's going on in the world, current events and news, and we compare that to prophecy. And this week, I can tell you that prophecy tells us that there's going to be wars and rumors of wars. We got both. That there's going to be earthquakes in various places. We got that going on. And you've got, people that don't know the difference between right and wrong, or they do. They just don't want to recognize it. Bible says that too. So anyway, if you're not a Christian, we do encourage you to become one and quickly because the rapture is next up. And once that happens, anybody that's left over has got to go through at least part of the Great Tribulation period. We hope that you'll join us next time for the next edition of The Last Christian. Until then, go to church. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Thanks again for joining us today for The Last Christian Radio Show. And be sure to tune in every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday right here and at www.lastchristian.net. Until the trumpet sounds.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. don't find yourself saying,
"When the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out."
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.